Hello, my name is Brad McIntyre, and you're listening to the Cultivated Playwright Podcast. This is episode 20. I'm sitting down to record this particular podcast episode in mid-July 2020. We are several months into the COVID-19 pandemic, and there has been a generalized stay-at-home order. The wearing of masks is encouraged, social distancing, washing of hands, and so on. And because of that, theaters, of course, have closed. Many theaters closed down in mid to late March. And because theaters need to plan their seasons ahead of time, they scrambled. This was a very quick cutoff time. And so theater organizations, as well as theater artists, individual theater artists, were taken a little bit by surprise. And we find ourselves in a situation when we cannot actually do our livelihood. We can't actually do our jobs. We can't advance our careers and make the things that we want to make. Like many other theater artists, the sort of patchwork of employment that pays my bills, especially in the summertime, has dried up. All of the artistic projects have been put on hold rather indefinitely. I'm not foreseeing going back into an actual theater building for the rest of 2020. And if theaters were to open towards the end of the year, I don't really think people are going to gather together in big audiences, especially the way they used to. And as I've been confined to my house, I have scrolled through various social media accounts, Instagram and Facebook, and I've checked on YouTube channels, especially of fellow theater makers and the theater companies that I tend to follow. And nestled amongst the, you know, home workout routines and pictures of people's pets, photos of homemade bread, I find that there is a rather troubling trend of particular kinds of posts that have popped up. These include invitations for virtual play readings, especially those that are done on Zoom, one-minute quarantine scripts, archival production photos or video footage from old productions that have been, you know, dusted off and brought back up, people singing songs from musicals, like in their bedrooms, accompanying themselves on ukulele, and so on and so forth. Now, these posts in and of themselves, there's nothing wrong with them. Some of them are quite amusing, and it is kind of fascinating to see old archival footage from a theater that you love, or from a theater artist, and you're like, oh yeah, I saw that person in that thing. I remember that. I remember that production. I was there. I saw that. On the other hand, some of them are not are not entertaining at all. I talked with one actress friend of mine, and she told me she had done several, like three or four, virtual play readings on Zoom. And they had been broadcast on, either on Facebook Live, or they had been broadcast in a different sort of way. They had been done live, but with the actors separated in their own homes, reading at the same time, and tickets had been sold or passwords given out so people could log on or links shared with the audience. I asked her how it went, and she said she enjoyed doing it as an artist, but she could not imagine having to watch a virtual play reading. And I sat down and tried to watch several of these virtual play readings. I tried to watch virtual productions, so to speak, like where people are trying to live broadcast plays in theaters that were meant to be done as theater productions with an audience. I even watched a Facebook Live improv set, or I should say, I watched a couple of minutes of it before I went off to do something else. Because the bottom line is, and I'm going to be just brutally honest right here, these are boring AF. Watching people do Zoom readings is just not entertaining. And it brings up two big issues that I have with these particular kinds of posts. One is, who is this stuff for? And two, do these theaters realize this is not actual theater? Let's address the first point first. Who's this stuff for? Now, I realize that before I get going on any kind of rant here, let me just say, I realize a lot of theaters were taken off guard. A lot of nobody planned for a major global pandemic to interrupt the end of their seasons. So a lot of people were put out of work. A lot of great stuff that was in the pipeline doesn't get to happen now. And theaters scrambled to, A, keep their audiences pleased, their subscribers in particular pleased and sticking with them, to keep themselves, you know, in sight, in mind, to show that, oh, we're here, we're doing stuff, we're here for you. I understand all that. And I understand that in the scramble to just get anything put up, to kind of overcome what could have nobody knew at the time, but it could have been a very temporary, you know, it could have lasted for a couple of weeks. And like many other industrialized countries around the world, maybe America would have gotten over this virus thing much quicker. We, of course, didn't. And I'm not going to go into the many, many reasons why that didn't happen, because of just non-decisive leadership. Lack of leadership, so to speak, in America, and mixed messaging from the highest authorities. But these things could have, the Zoom readings on a one-time basis as a novel way to keep the theater company or to keep theater artists individually advancing could have worked if it was a temporary thing. Like, we just did this. In the meantime, we're going to get back to our regularly scheduled programming. Don't worry about it. I can understand that. But of course, that's not the way things have worked out. We are now 4 or 5 months into stay-at-home orders. The pandemic is worse than ever. There's nearly 140,000 deaths here in America alone, which is about a fifth of the worldwide deaths from this pandemic. I don't see us getting back on top of anything for the rest of the year, like certainly until a vaccine is readily available to the masses. I don't see theater in particular, or any kind of event-based business, any movie theaters, any concerts, any gigantic sporting events, anywhere where basically audiences gather together in large groups. I don't see this getting back to normal, at least for the rest of 2020. I mean, projects have to be planned out in advance. I mean, you gotta know that you can do it way ahead of time in order to do it really well. So I don't see anything happening for a long time. And this brings up the second point. A lot of these things that theaters and individual theater artists are kind of going to in these social media posts are basically low-hanging fruit. I mean, Facebook Live, like putting your play on Facebook Live, live streaming productions in an empty room to a camera. There's a certain level of just, I don't know, sadness to that, to the whole aspect of that. These homebound projects that are being put on the internet. The other thing is, it's not theater. That really, really bugs me. Theater companies and, to some degree, individual theater artists that are working on these projects are scrambling just to put stuff online, and they're forgetting that they work in a different domain than television. They work in a different domain than motion pictures. Theater is a different animal. And I subscribe to the Peter Brook definition of theater, which is from the beginning of his book, Empty Space, where he says a person has to walk across an empty space with another person watching, and that is all that is needed for the act of theater to take place. But you have in that, you know, sentence or two, some very definite ingredients. You need somebody performing, you need somebody watching, aka the audience, And most importantly, those two groups are together in the same place. A lot of these Zoom play readings that are done spatially far apart, so people recording from their own individual houses, even if you're recording at the same time and broadcasting it, live streaming it to an audience, and the audience is in their own houses, this isn't theater. Like, it's not the definition of theater. It is a different thing. Now, don't get me wrong. I can appreciate the recording of certain productions for posterity, the recording of certain productions even for broadcast. I mean, I'm one of the people that watched Hamilton on Disney Plus. I was grateful to watch Hamilton on Disney Plus. It was very high quality, and I wasn't able to go see it on Broadway. And so I was grateful to see the original cast perform that show in the original theater where it was done, even if it was on a recording. I remember late last year, I went and saw Fleabag by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and she performed her own show. And it was a National Theater Live, NT Live production, and it was broadcast at movie theaters. And I believe it is now available on Amazon, by the way, for like $5. And she's put it online, that same recorded production, to raise money, actually, for coronavirus nonprofits and things like that. So if you get a chance, I highly recommend it. It is a great production, and she is wonderful in it, and it is a treat. I do not take it for granted that I got to see the original creator of that piece perform that piece, even if it's not live, even if I'm seeing a recording of a theater event. A recording of a theater event is still not an actual theater event. It is a recording of a theater event. There's no way around that. I remember when I was in high school, I got a VHS copy of Look Back in Anger, and it was like a teleplay. It was John Osborne's play, but it was broadcast on television in England, and it had Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson in it. It was very young at the time, and it was so awesome to be able to see those two, who I have artistic crushes on both of those people. I think Emma Thompson is just the balls, and I love Kenneth Branagh so much in all of his just over-the-top gloriousness. And to see them together, back when they were together as a couple, but also together on basically a stage acting out this really famous play, I thought that was great. I thought that was fantastic to have the opportunity to see that. But I didn't for a minute think that I'm seeing an act of theater. I'm seeing a recording of this play done for recording purposes. It wasn't the same thing. But that doesn't mean I didn't profit from it. I mean, I wore that VHS tape out. I just watched it so much it broke. It was ridiculous. I ended up having to track it down on DVD. And I'm sure somewhere you can stream it nowadays. I think it was done in the late 1980s, early 1990s. They all have really floppy hair in it. That's what I can tell you about it. But it's a savage play. And Kenneth Branagh is the quote-unquote angry young man in that play, Jimmy Porter. And man, he is brutal to the people around him. That is not a feel-good play by any stretch, Look Back in Anger by John Osborne. But that said, Fleabag, Look Back in Anger, Hamilton, the reason these recordings of plays work so well is because there was an original play. It was put up on stage. The street cred that Hamilton has is that it was a Broadway show. Fleabag, even though it got turned into a television show, came from that recording. Came from a one-person play. I mean, literally, she just sits on a stool and talks to the audience. There's no blocking in the play. There's some light changes and sound cues. It is the most minimal one-person production, and I'm fascinated by it. I have a huge artistic crush on Phoebe Waller-Bridge as well, and I will probably do a whole podcast about Fleabag in the future and the phenomenon that it is. If the original production of Fleabag had not premiered at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and then blown up, there would not have been an Amazon television show called Fleabag. Hamilton would not have worked in without the stage production. We wouldn't be wanting to, basically what I'm saying is, we wouldn't want to watch the recordings of the plays if we didn't already have the knowledge that it was a live theater show to begin with. Meaning, once it's a live production, you can make a recording of it and then you can broadcast it. The show itself can spin off into a TV show, into a podcast series, into a television event, into a motion picture, but it doesn't work the other way. It doesn't work in reverse. It goes from theater and then from theater to other media, but it doesn't start in other media and then become a play with the same power. That seldom happens. And I know there's going to be somebody listening to this out there that's like, well, what about those adaptations of movies that become Broadway musicals? And I'm not going to get into that with you. Yeah, Bring It On was a movie first, and then it got made into a musical. There's a whole host of movies that they've tried to make into musicals with varying degrees of success. But on the whole, my point is, especially for like really powerful plays that have made an impact in American or international theater, once they're live and a lot of audiences see them and buzz starts to grow, then they can be made into television shows. Then they can be made into other media, but it doesn't work so well in reverse. Because these productions, these social media posts that I see of people, you know, advertising Zoom readings and little innovative things that have to do with the quarantine and COVID and stuff like that, besides being this kind of basic level of desperation to them, like this kind of, and I'm sorry to say, this sort of patheticness to it, they're like huge reminders that they're not theater. They're huge reminders that actual theater, the actual theater experience, is far superior. And a live production with an audience in the room and a story being told with actors on stage in real time, moving through time and space in front of the audience, is so difficult to recreate. Even through technology, it is so difficult to recreate. So that brings up the question. If theater companies can't get back to doing things as normal, and we haven't brainstormed a better way right now than Zoom readings and posting old footage and old photos from other productions back when we were doing stuff on stage, what do we do? Like, where does the road go? And I have two thoughts on this. One thought is just calm down. Here's the deal. I had a couple of beers with a friend of mine several years ago, and we had a couple. I'll say we were a couple of beers into the evening, and we were discussing something, and I can't remember what the context around the conversation was, but I remember making the comment, we as people are never at 100%. Nobody ever sees us at 100%. We as people never get up to 100%. We never function and operate in life to our full potential, to our full operating capacity. We're always a little bit below. I mean, sometimes we reach heights. Ever so often, we're operating at the 90% range, maybe. But there's always things that have to be taken care of. We're always catching back up with ourselves. There's always little dents and stuff in our relationships with people. There's always financial troubles that have to be overcome. There's always just day-to-day things like traffic and scheduling and, you know, expired milk. Just the day-to-day stuff of living gets in our way. It gets in our way. I should in the future also make a podcast about my theory that life is only made up of hundreds and hundreds of small, tiny details that either make life better or make life worse. Make a little note of that here in front of me. But I just said, we're not at 100%. And it's because we're in the act of living life. We never get a chance to prepare for living life, because we have to continue living our lives. It's not like we can step outside of our own lives and prep. We can't cross train. There's no off season to get ready for life. You're just in your life trying to get by as best you can. So that's why nobody ever gets to 100%. There's no way to prepare for what is ahead. There's too much going on. I mean, it is a worthy goal to get pretty high up there, a high percentage, but we never get to the highest levels of ourselves because there's no do-overs. You don't get to train in the off-season. You know how like athletes take off when the season is not in progress? They weight train and they work on their skills and they run sprints and they basically work to get better. That's because when the season begins, whether they're football or basketball or baseball players or hockey players or what have you, once they're doing it, there's no time to train for doing it. The doing of it takes up all the time. It takes up all the energy. It takes up all the focus. So that's why they train in the off season. Living life is not like that. Doing theater is often not like that either. To tell the truth, if you're a very productive and progressing theater artist, you will often just be roll from project to project to project to project. One project begets more projects and so on and so forth, and your schedule fills up. If you get better at what you do, people will naturally want you to be involved in their projects and will send you offers, and things will start to stack up. And the more projects you do, the less you can prepare for the doing of it, if that makes sense. And so what I'm seeing from my fellow theater artists and some of these theater companies that these artists work for is this weird addiction to keep making things, even when there is no outlet for it. There's no audience right now. You can't get an audience in the room with the actors in the space, but still we are compelled to try to think of different ways to reach the audiences, to make theater happen, even though we've lost the means to make it happen. So I guess my advice is calm down. Like, just throwing more stuff up on the internet, by the way, is just adding to the noise box. I mean, the internet is the great depository of just junk. I mean, there's some really good stuff on the internet, like, I don't know, this podcast. But on the whole, the internet is just, everybody can throw stuff on the internet. So it's not like people were waiting for theater to finally get around to show up on the internet too. It's just adding to the noise. So I personally have a lot more respect for the theater than that. I don't want to add it just along with makeup tutorials and people's daily vlogs and gear reviews and all the stuff on YouTube and all the posts on Instagram of people's plates and people having vacations and pet photos and stuff. I don't want to add it along with that. It's different than that. It stands aside. It stands apart from those kinds of things. I don't think of theater as content. And I use the word purposefully, content, in a derogatory way. I love YouTube. I absolutely love it. I spend way too much time on YouTube. But a lot of the stuff I watch on YouTube is a lot like the other stuff I watch on YouTube. And none of it actually needs to exist. Very few of the videos that I watch add actual value to my life. Most of them are just disposable things. It's like candy for the eyes. I watch it and I forget about it. It's something to do. It's the dopamine hit. Same thing with pictures on Instagram, people reading, catching up with Facebook posts 9 times out of 10. It's not important. Theater, on the other hand, should have significance. It is an art form that should have importance. And so it's an art form that does not belong on the internet. And just to recap, putting things online is not actual theater. The other thing about this whole situation, so everything does not have to be gloom and doom. Theater artists can just chill out. They can go into their off season. You can hunker down and get to work. If you're an actor, start reading some books on acting and work on your accents and research some of the plays that you might want to act in the future. If you're a playwright, you can do all the work you want to do. There's just no outlet for it right now. So don't stress about it. Don't let go of this addiction to have to create all the time, this pressure that we put on ourselves. Here's what I'm personally doing right now. I'm personally working on a play, and I am enjoying the working on of this particular play. I like the process. I genuinely like crawling inside the thing and not worrying about deadlines and not worrying about what I'm going to do with the play later on. I don't know what I'm going to do with the play later on. When is it going to get done? I don't know. Nobody's going to see it anyway for the rest of the year. I mean, I'm not going to send it off to any place for the rest of the year. So there's no hurry. I'm just having a really good time working on this play that will be done in the future someday. Use this time, artist, just to store up, rest, recuperate, to reboot, really. And then we should give a lot of consideration to what the future of theater holds. It's not often that we get a chance to just stop in our tracks and look around and reflect and really think about where we want to go. What does the future of theater look like? How are we going to interact with audiences? Now, again, I can see why this is because of our type A kind of personalities that are drawn to the theater, but also because we want to make money. We want our livelihoods to happen. I mean, why should we be penalized because there's a stupid pandemic happening? Why should we have to shut down? But I'm sorry to say, the truth of reality is that we have to shut down for a while. And I'm saying, why not use this as an opportunity to really think about where we want to go from here? So when things do open up, it's not going to be the same business as usual. We're going to come out of the gates with a stockpile of stuff that we want to unload on the world. And in a macro way, to really look around at the theater as a whole. And how can it better serve our audiences? How can it better serve our communities? How can it better serve us as artists? How can we tell the stories that we haven't been telling up till now? And I'm literally saying how. Like the presentation techniques, the distribution system, how artists interact with the audiences, how artists interact in the buildings where these things are presented. All that we need, the bare bones that all we have to actually have, according to Peter Brook, and that's what I'm going to go by, is we have to have people performing, people watching those performers, and they have to gather together in the same space. After that, the sky is the limit. We don't have to do things as we have always done. We just have to hit those bare bones necessities that actually, you know, dictate the parameters of the actual art form. Other than that, do whatever we want to do. So what do we want to do? I think this is a wonderful question to ask ourselves. I think about this all the time. What does the future of theater hold? Where do we want to go? This generation, my generation, the generations behind me of theater artists that are currently working and creating work for the world, what do we want to put into the world, and how do we want to put it out into the world? I mean, if that doesn't light you up, you're in the wrong field, my friend. That whole prospect of rebooting and starting again with new kinds of theater and presented in new kinds of ways. Oh man. That I tell you, I'm kind of excited about it. I'm kind of thrilled, and I see it as a silver lining. I mean, do I wish there was not a pandemic happening? Yeah, I wish there was not a pandemic happening. It'd be great if there was no COVID-19 happening right now. Things are hard. Just on the whole, things are hard. They're difficult. So I say we as theater artists should stop picking the low-hanging fruit. Now that the novelty has worn off, I understand Everybody had to scramble for a little bit, but now the novelty's worn off. So stop making Zoom readings. Stop trying to recreate the theater experience through some sort of digital media. It's not theater. You're not making theater. You're just making a lot of noise. And then let's think about what we're going to do. Let's think about where we're going to go. And let's use this time to prep for that. All right. I felt bothered by what I was seeing around me. And I kind of wanted to put together this particular episode of the Playwright Podcast. You can check out my stuff at my website, bradmcintyre.com. There's a link to my plays that are published through Amazon and so on and so forth. That's it. Stay safe out there, everybody. And once again, thanks for listening. Thank you.